Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, December 27, 2008. Tonight, we're going to continue on with the seminar, and we're going to go right into everybody's favorite, time travel. Time travel. Yes, we're going to talk about time travel. As soon as Dr. Bell gets speaking there. Are you going to speak, Dr. Bell?
Right.
There you go.
So, the Andromeda said, because I already built a time machine, I was ready for this, we're going to stop time. You're going to witness it. And we're going to separate the universe, and we're going to separate this vortex from the Earth right now, and you're going to see this happen. And they said, you better brace yourself, because this is going to scare you a little bit. So I grabbed hold. I didn't know what the hell was coming down. I mean, this is some shit they lay on me. I grabbed hold of that table, and I saw time stop. Basically, everything froze, just like it had when I was in my time machine. One side of the cupboards existed on the right. The other side of my living room didn't even exist anymore. All I could see was out where the ocean was, and half of Laguna Beach disappeared. Then as I stood by the cupboard, I had my point of reference looking this way, which I'm looking towards the refrigerator. This side of the house disappeared, that side of the house disappeared, and the entire world turned 360 degrees, made a complete rotation, taking about 45 or 50 seconds slowly. And the only thing that existed was this little fragment of me in this ebullience of nothingness, holding on to this goddamn thing. Totally, you talk about vertigo. I had some vertigo like you've never imagined. And I'm standing on here, and this is really happening. I'm feeling the wind on my face. And I'm wishing I was on drugs or drunk or something, you know. I needed something. This is really happening. And the whole world turned 360 degrees. And then it solidified. It gradually came in again. So it slowed down. It just went. Just imagine you're here, and the whole world around you, and you're the only thing that's not moving, turned 360 degrees. And she said, we are now making an intervention into every single atom of this planet that's just changed its frequency. Half your historical past doesn't even exist anymore. And this is how they do it. Boom. And it stopped. And I just about passed out. And I went over, and I got a gallon of water out. And I said, I got to detox quick from that. I drank a whole gallon of water in one swig just to get grounded from that.
Are they using machinery?
They don't say what they use. I know. See, when I was a contactee of the Pleiadians, the way that the contact would start is that I'd feel a chill on my body like a wind. I would see hair on my arm, and my head would start to get the prick, you know, start prickling up. And then I would hear, I would have a female, like, you know, when you see a pretty girl or a pretty guy from a girl's point of view, that energy that comes over you, especially if you're 19 years old and you've had two drinks, that same sexual rush, you know, that would come over me. And then I'd hear a separate voice, her voice, Semyasi's voice, very soft, completely different from my thoughts. There was no doubt it was a female voice, and I felt female tantric energy all over me. That was the way. That was really nice. I mean, there was nothing wrong with that. When the Andromedans started communicating with me, they said it would be holographically, and they would disassemble the geometry of my DNA. All my atoms would be dematerialized simultaneously, and I would have to expect that. You know, it would take me a while before it would become comfortable. So the first time they did it to me, to put this knowledge into me, because it's not a flow of events like with a contact with the Pleiadian, the way they do it. They send an energy down to you. It registers in the cells and in your brain and different places in your body. And later on, when the contact is over, if you take verbal notes or written notes, later on you kind of channel the information out of your body. You're unchanneling yourself. Okay, it's basically what it is. That's why Billy Myers always did it. You'd have recall of stuff that was happening so fast over the period of several months. With the Andromedans, it's instantaneous recall at any point in time. At any time you need it, it's there. There's no waiting. There's no getting into the mood. You know, I could be digging a hole or putting a fence post in or running or driving my car on a freeway or screaming at somebody. It just comes and it's there and you need it and it's now. It's different. But when the process starts, when they first started initializing me into this process, you know how your hand goes to sleep or your leg and it's numb? Imagine your whole body going to sleep. Instantaneously. You're numb. You can't move. You're frozen. And this tremendous vibration, this pressure, it's like they put me inside of a, imagine like a, what it would be like if you were to put a that thick of a glass over you and put about 2,000 pounds per square inch of pressure in there. It would take, it's this vibrating and then it's jamming this into your DNA. And the first time I had it, I thought I was having a seizure or a heart attack. I don't know what it was. I went out and got every kind of medical test you could possibly get after that. And we heard this glass. There's nothing wrong with you. Get used to it. And then when the numbness stopped, I could close my eyes. And I don't know if you saw a picture. I think there's a picture up on the mantel up there. I mean, I haven't seen it lately, but it's there. It's up on the, that I did. I became an auto writer, and I just close my eyes like Lebowski used to do it, and not even look at what I'm doing. I can write and draw pictures because they just take over. And I did that a few times for me to get used to it. And then the process is so smooth now I don't even notice it's happening because I'm used to it now. It's like it's there, it's happening, and suddenly I realize it just happened. It doesn't scare me anymore, but it was very frightening in the beginning. But he said that's necessary. I asked her. I said. In 89, when Sannyasi told me that she was leaving, I asked her why she was leaving, and she said that the Pleiadians cannot, you know, the earth people give off what's called an auric stench. In other words, it's this negative energy. Even if you're a fairly healthy, nice, decent person, you still, to them, have an auric stench. And so, if you understand what I was talking about longevity and auras, and what he was saying, is if you're around people with short-term auras for any length of time, your short-term auras, your DNA is going to be registering that, and you're going to start getting shorter and shorter to life. So a Pleiadian can only serve here in this aura field of this earth and around people for 10 or 15 years, otherwise they're going to die. So they're going to have a very short life, and they're going to get sick and fall apart. So they have to leave. So they rotate them. They come in groups. When they come in, this group comes and another group leaves. But as a race, they can only come for so long. When a planet is going into transition like we are, they can't be here for that. Why? Because if they are here interfering or helping out or trying to perform some divine intervention thing, they'll create so much negative karma that they'll destroy their entire race. Their civilization will be destroyed, you know. And anytime you see channeling from the Pleiades, you know, a lot of it's bullshit. I'll tell you that right now. The Pleiadians are they have fights. They get arguments. Sannyasi's brother does not like me. He's never liked me. He hates me. But we don't go to war over it. We just don't get along. His name is Quetzal. And one time, she allowed me to fly her ship out in New Mexico. And he almost had a heart attack over it. You know, I mean, didn't agree with him, but Sannyasi let me do different things to understand, you know, certain things that were necessary in the teachings. So they are human, they have emotions, they just live a little bit longer and a little bit more calmer, but I'll tell you, you don't want to piss one off, you know. They carry a weapon system, you know. When Pleia, Sannyasi's sister, came out to Billy Meyer one day, Billy Meyer was riding his moped, and so Pleia wanted to ride it. And the Pleiadians, they're not supposed to drive cars or motorcycles here, but Pleia ended up on the motorcycle. And she got to drive it around over in the hills in outside of Zurich, there where Billy lives. So then, after she drove the motorcycle around for 2 hours, and her father had a fit over it, she comes back and hands him a ray gun. And so he starts shooting holes in trees with her ray gun. And I've got photographs of it at home, the ray gun and the trees and the holes and all that. I just didn't think it was apropos for this seminar to show you Pleiadian weaponry, but they have it. And I've seen it, and so they are armed and dangerous. If you don't want to mess with them, but they are not going around, and their overall purpose is to help the world. You know, they have a life space. Their vibratory rate of era is so great that they have what's called an S-carved flute. An S-carved flute is when you do a trispasso, left eye to left eye, and fire breathing, like I was telling you yesterday. They have an S-carved flute, and two people blow into a flute simultaneously, and they have to harmonize their breath, and they get zero sound out of it. But the sound is so beautiful that it causes light to liquefy. And so when S-carved flutes are being played, light turns into liquid, and it goes around corners and stuff. I mean, it's really bizarre, some of the stuff they've got, and we could have it here if we clean up this vibratory rate a little bit. So anyhow, Sannyasi told me that she lost her husband on Pluto 20 years ago doing some mining out there because they mine dead planets. They don't mine living planets. That's stupid. And her dad was getting ready to go. and the whole group was leaving, and they were finished here. And so what's happening now? You know, am I going to have more Pleiadians? He says, no, you'll have no more Pleiadian contacts in this life that we know of. Maybe occasionally we'll say hello or something from some distance. There's certain things that happened that I learned since then. She did come back one night a year later and stand in a bush behind me up here at top of the world because I was depressed, you know, after having gone 20 years without, you know, and then nothing, you know, it's kind of depressing. So she came back and stood in the bushes and talked to me up there on top of the world. But that was a little bit of a surprise. But other than that, I mean, no real things are going on, and that's very rare that something like that would happen. And so I said, well, why are you leaving? You know, she explained not only as her group leaving, but overall, the main Pleiadian influence has to leave this world now, and the Andromedans have to come. And I knew that the Andromedans, I'd read about them, and Paul Hernandez, who was Potrero's right-hand man in Mexico, and I had an interface with Potrero several years ago when he was the king of Mexico, the president of Mexico. I'd had a direct interface with him, so I could relate to John Hernandez, his number one nuclear scientist, being abducted by an Andromedan group. They physically took him away in a ship after he spent several years with one of the other Andromedan people. So I had a feel for what they were about. And I know that I've seen in Wendell Stevens' book, if you take a picture of one of them, that you just get a, looks like a cocoon of light. You don't see the physical features, even though they are human. So I knew a little bit about them. And so when Nayara came, I was kind of getting ready for them. You know, it was like a new experience. And Sannyasi explained that the Andromedans they live 5,000 years, and they don't reproduce like a Pleiadian. They produce in a tantric way, and they rematerialize in about 2 minutes. In other words, they get to be 5,000 years old, and they completely collapse their energy, and they take up another form again immediately in 5 minutes if they want to. So their societies and their way lifestyles, they do fly around in physical ships. We were up at Santa Cruz. We were able to see one night, and Pravka, my wife, saw it in a very close range, and it was pointed out that a ship was coming, and she got to see it. They do have ships, but they are because they're a 5,000-year-old being, they have a little bit more of a handle on natural law. They're considered the highway patrol of the universe. For example, in a Pleiadian ship, if it's programmed, the way that the transport system works in a Pleiadian ship for hyperleaps is that they take a photograph. Basically, you can imagine they take a three-dimensional photograph of the area around the ship, and they photograph the top, they photograph the bottom, and they have this picture of where they are. This is when they get outside the Earth, you know, and they don't do it right on the ground here. Then they have in their computer another photograph of where they want to be, and what they do is dump the computer down. I can show you. I built one of their engines once. I've got it in my slides here. But they cancel. They have this chamber that where this picture. There's a optic system on the top and the bottom of the ship, and that big beam ship that you see the lights coming up with, the big one, the big thing on the top. That's a more complicated optic system, but it basically feeds in this information. So they have a picture of where they want to be, and they have a picture of where they are, and they switch the picture information. They reproject outside of the ship to the area they want to be, and then they end up there. That's how they get there. Okay. And it's a science that they developed because their worlds are their suns are within a light year of one another. Over at she comes from a sun called Tegata, which is only a light year from another sun. On Era, you see two suns. You see one bright sun and one small sun. It's really pretty. And the hydrogen atom is the same as it is here, except they got flowers that, you know how our sunflowers open and close. They have flowers that turn and face the two suns and change color during the day. I mean, their horticulture is beyond anything I could describe here. This place looks like a weed dump, I mean, next to where they come from. And their planet is green from space, and ours is blue, because they don't have as much oceans as we do. And that's a whole other story, how come we got so much oceans. It was created by a catastrophe. But anyway, so there's a difference in their propulsion. So in order to go from point A to point B, they have to map, they have to take little individual pictures to form a photo map from point A to point B. You don't just conjure up a picture. You have to make a photo map. So first they made a photo map using a normal ion propulsion system, no speed of light overdrive stuff, and they took pictures of their whole neighborhood over there. And then they started to assemble these pictures. And then they started to do theoretical picture taking to make bigger and bigger leaps. And that's how they started leaping around. Okay? A lot of times when they get so far out in their explorations, they conjure up a picture of what they think because they've seen it from different angles of where they want to go, but the picture isn't quite right, and that's how they die. Okay? That's a Pleiadian death. Boom. They dematerialize forever. They're gone. They're history. And eventually they'll come back. Their aura frequency will come back. But who knows when? That's when they get lost. They don't even know when they come back into their society, and their computers can't find them anywhere. That's why I built the time machine, because Sannyasi told me, you better get lost in time before you get lost in space. If you get lost in time and space simultaneously, you'll never find your way back. And that's some of the big picture. So, where the Andromedans come in as the highway patrol is that if you have two ships coming from Pleiades to here, and they're going to be beaming in at the same time, they don't need to materialize in the same space. That would cause the equivalent of a nuclear bomb going off, with all that energy. So the Andromedans map out energy highways, or I call them electric highways, and keep all the synchronicity of all the ship travel in these sectors from banging and having crashes into each other and stuff. Okay. Now the Greys, they don't really pay much attention. They're a little bunch of pesky little assholes, you know, like they're running around the universe without driver's licenses half the time. And so they're constantly having crashes like they do up here in New Mexico. They're getting bumped into, they're getting destroyed. The Pleiadian, if a Grey gets in front of a Pleiadian, they'll blow them right out of the sky if they have to, you know. They give them a warning. But the Andromedans, there's photographs taken by NASA, I've seen some of them, of ships firing on each other in space, taken from the Apollo missions. Oh yeah, actual dogfights. That's something like I hear. And so the Andromedans regulate all this, you know. The Andromedans travel in motherships. They travel in huge ships when they move around. We're talking major size ships. First time I ever saw, and the Andromedans, Pleiadians don't like to be seen by people. Because when they're seen by people, then they're recognized when they're on the streets or something. Because they'll come down here for 2 or 3 hours sometimes, and they don't want to be recognized or captured. The government has already captured a bunch of them and put them in deep freeze at Wright-Patterson. And when you freeze a Pleiadian in cryogenics, it's a slow death for them because they spend more time on the astral plane than they do the physical when they're crossing space. And so, you know, like if a human dies, you want to cremate them immediately so they're free of their bodies. The Pleiadian gets frozen, he's stuck to that body for a long time. And so when the Pleiadians come over Wright-Patterson, a lot of times they have astral contact with some of their brothers that have been captured. And the ships are over here at Area 51, but the bodies are over in Wright-Patterson. There's 15 of them that I know of. So one of these days those bodies have to be destroyed, and the Andromedans will come in and do that. Pleiadians are still a friendly enough race where they won't rush in to Wright-Patterson and rescue and destroy the bodies. Obviously, they've been frozen; they have to be destroyed. That frees them, but they will not do that. They're that friendly, that peaceful. But so these are some of the kinds of things that go on. So anyhow, the Pleiadians like to keep out of the way of things, and the reason they got captured is because the Greys, when some of our missiles were armed with antimatter generators, which he was talking about, and fired on from military jets of the Pleiadian ships, and they brought them down. And the ones that are here that went on the element 115 are not capable of any form of interstellar flight, because when the ships were brought down, they have signatures in them. You know how you have a key in your car to start it? Well, they have signatures that are only part of the pattern of the pilot. And so anything happens to the pile, these signatures destroy themselves. They blow up. The switches break. And so certain parts of the ship have been destroyed. They can hover those things. If you ever listen to Lazara, all you ever saw those, what they call sport models, was they're hovering over Area 51. They never fly them because they're not capable of any kind of flight. They can hover, and that's about it. So anyway, it was I forget the date, but it was in 1989 when I had my first contact with Liara. And she basically, it happened on a Friday afternoon in October or November. I have a date written down in my notes at home. And when she came, I was up there, you know that park? Maybe you noticed the park with the tennis courts. Well, that park was built back, it was commissioned back in 1987, that park, and it was completed. They're still adding to it. So I was up there jogging. I start my jogging at the park, and I go up through the hills when I run. So I was just getting ready to start my jogging up there on that hill, and this voice is very much like the Semyasi voice. The first contact was very similar to Pleiadian, except I didn't feel any sexual energy, but I definitely heard the voice. And it says, "Hello, I'm in Liara. I'm a new person here, you know." And I said, "Well, that's great." And I was—you got to understand that I'm a triple Leo. I'm a little bit emotional sometimes, you know. And I just lost my girlfriend of 20 years, and so I really wasn't looking forward to the Andromedans. I could really, you know, care less about the Andromedans. That I was really happy with the Pleiadians. My point of view, I was an idiot anyway around them. Well, all I know, I knew nothing. And why turn me over to some higher race when I don't even understand the race that I'm dealing with? But for those karmic reasons, they had to. So she says, "I'm Liara." And I says, well, to myself, great, you know, I mean, this is wonderful. Where the hell are you? I don't see anything, you know. And she says, you know, just like ignores what I'm thinking, because I know they can read your thoughts instantly when you let them. And if you're talking to them mentally and communicating telepathically, they're definitely, that's how you do it. But you're also reading their thoughts too a little bit. So it's a two-way exchange. So she says that she's going to be here, and she starts telling me she's going to be teaching me politics, you know, and I'm going to be learning all kinds of stuff. And I says, "Where are you?" And she says, "Well, we're right here." And then I come off with a real smart comment like, "Well, I suppose you're like the Pleiadians. You're invisible half the time. I'm the only one that can see you. And that's rare, and most of it's all going to be mental stuff again, right?" She says, "Quite to the contrary." And I looked around. I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She says, "We'll become visible anytime we want in front of anybody. We're not shy, we're not bashful, and we don't basically care who sees us or when they see us or where they see us. On the street, in the air, it doesn't matter." So I thought, this is kind of interesting, you know. These people aren't bashful, you know. And she says, "Would you like to see us right now?" And I look around, and there's people are jogging. It's late afternoon, it's a Friday. There's about 30 or 40, 50 people up there in that park. And it's in the end of the summer. It's usually pretty busy. People are playing tennis. And I says, "Sure, I don't mind. You know, I'd like to see you right now." She says, "Look over here." So she had me look over that way in the kind of like the northeast direction. I look up there, and I don't see anything, you know. And she says, "Keep looking." I says, "All right." I says, and all of a sudden in the sky, and you imagine if you're on that hill, you know, here's the hill up here, you know, like this, and here's the tennis courts over here, you know, to give you a size of perspective, you know. This is the entire park. This is probably the entire hill from here to here. Falls off the canyon, goes down into the Ben Browns over there. So I looked up at the sky. This would be my house back over here, and the ocean is like, you can see it all the way around like that. So I looked up in the sky, and I see this big square, okay, up here. And I say, this square, big square, like a square, like a neon, the best way I can describe it is a neon light shaped like a square, appears in the sky. It's about 600 feet across, about 2 foot football fields across. Big square. You know, well, this is a real exciting thing. I'm tremendously cynical. I don't know why I'm being this way at this time, but this is where my head was at on that day. I was still sulking over the Pleiades. Then I see another square. Then I see another square. Then I see another square. Then I see another one here. And another one here. And another one here. And here. And like this. Each one the size of one or two football fields. And then another one. And then another one. And there was one, two, three, four. And one, two,
There was 16, I guess, if I remember correctly. And all these squares, now we've taken up a third of the sky with some squares. Then they start to get brighter. Then I see the light radiating off it, and I start to see a silhouette of this ship. It's a cigar shape. And I'm seeing about a third of a silhouette of a ship, and these are getting brighter, and as they get brighter, it's starting to reflect. Still, you can see blue sky through it. Some highly sophisticated technology is obviously going on here. And this huge cigar is starting to appear. And then, this is the third, then another set of squares starts to come on, and another set of squares, and basically, we have enough square. We got four sets of these squares, and the whole sky is full of these squares, and this full fuselage is starting to become very apparent. And this thing is a mile or two across. This is Liara. Very first contact. And I'm looking at this thing, and But I said to her, I says, I'm looking at it. Now she's got my attention. I am definitely one interested human here, And then I come off with, then I catch myself, Because I've had some bizarre contacts. Ask Propagel, she had a brake light that are straight at our truck at 400 feet away. I almost crashed into my pickup truck with two other witnesses in Dulce. I mean, we're talking some major action we've had. So then I'm looking at this huge thing up in the sky, which is about like that. I'm over at the end of the park. And I said, well, I suppose I'm the only one that can see this, meaning that the Pleiadians would do some of this stuff, but except one time in 81, I was allowed to take a group out for a demonstration of flight with a whole group. I figure I'm the only one seeing it. And she says, why don't you look around instead of looking at us? So I start looking around. People aren't playing tennis anymore. People aren't jogging anymore. The whole park is staring at this giant object in the sky, going nuclear. And then starts to fade out. Blink, 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 blink. And it fades out. And she says, you get the picture. You got my attention, ma'am. She's very matronly. Now, Liara is a very matronly person, She's like talking to a middle-aged... she reminds me of that prosecutor, Marcia Garcetti, in the O.J. Simpson case. She even looks a little bit like her. Maybe she's an Andromeda. The head prosecutor, that woman, you've probably seen her on TV. Yeah. You've seen her demeanor. Liara's like that. She's there, small amount of humor, straight ahead, no bullshit. That's Liara, Sugasa was a little different, Billy and I both tried to get onto her physically, and both of us got shot down pretty quick. I had one tantra experience with her, and that was about it, and I was single at the time, so I figured it was okay. We never had anything like that again. But Liara, you wouldn't even think about sexual approach on this woman. I don't think they have sex. They have this other thing that's much more intense. But they are great teachers. They teach us an awful lot. And that's the only time I've seen that ship. But I've seen several times since then other different smaller ships. I'm going to take about a 5-minute break here. I got to go get this piece of dirt out of my eye, You won't come back in 5 minutes. Pyramids. When you look directly at a pyramid, you have seven levels of consciousness. We talked about yesterday, the meditation, and the bottom of it manifests physically in this part here, and the top part, which is the first ray, manifests here. And this, of course, is the iron atoms in your body, the carbon atoms in your body. All this manifests consciousness. The first thing is the hydrogen atom. The hydrogen atom is the first atom to connect with carbon, and then oxygen and nitrogen follow. And so we've talked about the energy and how that stuff works. When you have the pyramid upside down near a gravitational body, like a gravitational body, the polarity shifts up, becomes 180 degree out of phase, and that's why the female energy works. We've discussed all that. You can see that in the picture there, some drawing of how they look. Wearing them on the head, a couple of things happen that's really important to understand. When you look at the arterial size, when you breathe oxygen in,
about living on the flatland is this time of day, the air gets too still.
Really, it's flat out here, you know, yeah. I'm just living on the hill. When you breathe air in, the air goes immediately to the lungs. When it gets out of the lungs, it goes directly in through the left atrium of the heart, out through the aorta valve, through the trachea, up to the brain. The size of the arteries from the lungs to the brain are very large, up to a quarter of an inch in diameter. As soon as you get to the brain, you realize this is the flow of oxygen, life force, into your body. As soon as you get to the brain, the arterial size of the brain is reduced down to a millionth of an inch. See? So what happens is, the brain becomes a strainer, and it starts straining. So over a period of a lifetime, all the shit that's in the air in your blood ends up in your brain, the chest down your brain. First part of your brain to go is your cerebellum. It means you can't stand on one foot, you can't touch the ground, and come back up, walk around backwards. It's things that I can still do, what I did when I was a kid when I played out. Most people can't do that, okay? Because the cerebellum is damaged. Then this goes into the midbrain, and then it goes into the forebrain. When it hits the forebrain, it shuts down the third eye, the pineal gland, and the body gets ready to exit the form. The consciousness exits the form. It's the aging process, again, on another level. Realize that every single red blood cell in your body has a perfect DNA imprint of your brain on it. Okay? Meaning that if you were to look at somebody's blood, they haven't done this on this planet, but they're starting to. This is DNA imprinting. Okay? What you'll see in the O.J. Simpson case, it will come to the public. But what that's about is you're looking through a microscope at the person, at a person's brain, every red blood cell. Every single red blood cell. If you pick up this book and read a little bit of information out of here, and this registers as thought, and registers as growth expansion, inside your brain, a little area has had a little drill has gone in there, has drilled a little hole, because it's memory, it's deposited a little bit of iron there from your blood, and it's made a little cavity. So every time you learn, your brain etches in a new imprint, physically, in the gray matter, okay? Whenever that happens, every single red blood cell in your body changes exactly to match the imprint of your brain. It's DNA matching, okay? When you get in touch with that holographically, you come into the power of the Andromedans, and you realize what he was talking about. When you're sick, the universe is sick. When the universe is well, you're well. Okay? So that takes you into the power. But it takes a 5,000-year-old being to really master it. Humans aren't capable of mastering it because they have logic. There is no logic in Andromedan thought. It doesn't exist. There's nothing linear at all about these people. So it's a waste of time. When you wear the pyramid on your head, yeah, exactly. You're talking about a mental
control reality.
Yeah, exactly.
You can do the same thing.
Yeah, everybody can. But we were trained not to. You know, you cut a tail off a lizard and it grows back. As nobody told you, couldn't grow a tail back. Chop a man's arm off, he can still feel where the arm was, but it doesn't grow back because some idiot somewhere back in the DNA told man if he lost his arm, he couldn't have a new one.
Right.
You know, brain cells. I've taught my brain cells. I can reproduce my brain cells. Try to tell you that you destroy your brain cells? Bullshit. I put more poison in my brain, more alcohol, more drugs than 10 people. I've got about 10 people on every level of poisons. And my brain is better than most because I made my brain hellhole again. I wouldn't accept this bullshit damage. I remember damaging myself. I remember being screwed up. I remember short-term memory loss, but that all went away when it was supposed to. Oh, yeah, yeah. Chew it up. Nothing. Yeah. Again, it's just like it gets rid of headaches. Acid gets rid of headaches. I mean, I take acid now, nothing happens. I used to take 50 or 100 hits and when I was really into it, trying to get that final.
You used to have a lot of clinics for problems.
Yeah, great for headaches. But I mean, the average person, if they take, you know, full of bullshit, that's all they see is bullshit. They go on a bullshit trip, you know? But anyway. Yeah. So anyhow, when you put the pyramid on your head, what it does is it starts vibrating your head and cleans all that stuff, that accumulation, that residue, and so your brain starts to function again. Okay? The stronger the pyramid, the quicker it cleans your brain out. The power one, what I've got, a silver one, works the best. Okay? A lot of times you're going to get a headache when you put a silver thyroidome on. That's because all the stuff is going back into your blood and going down to your liver. When it gets down to your liver, it's called a friendly headache syndrome. Okay? Very important to wear a pyramid as much as possible. The nuclear receptor does not do that. It doesn't even phase the brain. The receptor works on the DNA. It works on the integrity of the life force. And each one of these things is life extension. Each one of these things is another area of the body to study. We put these on a class up in the University of California at Santa Barbara. And you know, the problem with colleges, and I've been to enough of them, is that the material is for consciousness of a caveman. So that these progressive students that are up there don't want this material. So everybody does drugs and spaces out in school. And then, of course, they jack the price up and try to force people out. If they're doing raising the university rates completely out of sight, there's a whole collegiate system in the world sucks. I mean, that's the best way I could describe it. So we took a class at Santa Barbara and put pyramids on their heads and made them wear it for a whole semester. We raised the grade point of the class 1 point. We had a B-minus class to a B. I think we went to a B or a B-plus. The whole grade point went up. When we were doing this, I used to work in universities all over the country with pyramids. And so we performed millions of tests. Amherst College offered me a very large grant, but I told them that when I was back there lecturing, there teaching their professors, because I usually educate professors and PhDs, I told them that the only reason I wouldn't go to Amherst is I quit. When I lived in Ann Arbor, I shoveled too much snow. And Buckminster Fuller was the guy that offered the grant. It was a real honor to have Bucky Fuller, before he died, offered me a grant at his school, because that was his school. It was a pre-med school for MIT and Harvard. But anyhow, at University of California, when I was working with them, we had a school system at San Luis Obispo, a school system up there, and we had a teacher in there using them in his class. We had the Wilton School up in L.A. using them for kids on Ritalin and stuff, you know, because they get hyperactive. So we used to use this. So anyhow, I get this call at 2 o'clock in the morning from Sky Lewis, a teacher up at this Orchid Union School. This is San Luis Obispo. It's called Orchid Union School. He calls me up and says, "We've had a miracle happen here in the class." And I says, "What do you mean?" He says, "A little kid by the name of Stan Alms, he's 9 years old. He's had a grand mal seizure since birth, and he's been wearing your pyramid. And we weren't sure what was happening, but after he'd been wearing it a month now, for the last 2 weeks, the kid hasn't had a seizure. We know it's the pyramid. And the kid even was dyslexic, and now he could write, started writing normally, and he wrote me a testimonial, which is in my book, Death of Ignorance. So this is great for grand mal seizures, because it electrical precursing energy directs electricity, then that, in this case, caused his lithium therapy that they were heading on to start working. He started metabolizing his minerals, because it started the electrolyte action, which causes metabolism and electrolysis in the brain. This is good for cocaine babies, too, and also for cocaine mothers, you know, if they have to do that drug. It helps them give birth to a normal child, yeah.
What therapy is Dr. Brown Mossy?
Radon.
Silverman,
yeah. The gold-plated one is a tranquilizer, because it only stimulates the chakras in the body that are related to gold. And the silver one relates chakras to silver, because each body, each chakra, each endocrine gland has different doors on it, vibration. So the different metals in the pyramid turn on different valves and turn on different switches in the body. Okay. Another example of an extreme example of a consciousness change in an individual. In 1979, we were at Portland Hilton in Portland, Oregon, and we were doing a National Health Federation show. This is 1979. We had just invented the radome. We used to sell the pyridome, radome, and firedome. We didn't have any powerdome in those days. $39.95. I don't know. We used to sell all three of them for $40. $39.95. That's when gold was $125 an ounce. It's $500 now. This little, very attractive housewife keeps hovering. I had a business suit on, short hair, and so I look like a Mr. Straight with a pyramid on, you know. This housewife keeps hovering over the booth, you know. And at that time, I was married to Alana's mother, the girl that was at the house last night. Her mother was there. And she had a pyramid on. And everybody in the whole goddamn hotel had it on. The National Health Federation had them on, because they all were into it. And this woman keeps hovering, you know. And I said to her, Lady, what's your problem? You need a pyramid. I tell her, I said, you really need a pyramid bad. I just said, oh. She was like, oh, you know. And she was kind of a, let's say, upper middle class kind of dress, kind of a straight woman, in other words. And it's a little bit of jewelry on. So she comes over there, kind of fiddles around with them, and picks up all three of them. I says, you need all three of these. You take them home immediately and start wearing them. I told her, anybody in my life needed a pyramid, it was her, you know. And she went for it. And she took them home, started wearing them. Her name was Jay-Z Knight. Okay? So just give you an idea what they can do. It took her 3 months. So there's things like that happen. I could go on and give a whole other seminar on things like Jay-Z Knights of this world that have been enlightened by the pyramids and systems, but I'm not here for that. You'll find out for yourself if you're interested. I don't have to tell you. It'll surface somewhere, you know. Yeah, I will. So first, we got to get to that point. The next point we're going to be now, the fourth scalar wave. And where's my Death of Ignorance book? You got any of those left? Everybody buy them all. Yeah, they're there. Okay. This is the next step.
Scalar waves.
Ah! Very interesting. Okay. I'm assuming most people know what a chakra is by now. I'm assuming you remember everything from yesterday. Because if you don't remember everything from yesterday, you're going to get completely lost at this point on. Okay? So if you have any questions about yesterday, you better answer them now, or you're going to get lost. Okay. I'm assuming you know this stuff. Okay, we're looking at the energy. And we realize that we're on Earth, and we're moving 1,000 miles an hour right now. We've got energy emanations coming from Sirius. We've got Pleiades, Orion, hitting, crossing swords with the force of the Earth. That compute to you, right? So, effectively, everywhere, everything on this Earth is being struck by energy because of the rotation of the Earth. Okay? And that includes us. So we are getting struck by external energies. Okay? And I'm talking external forces, not internal forces. We are being struck by external forces. This external reaction on our physical bodies is what animates us. Why we're here. I've explained to you how the blood makes your fingerprints. I've explained to you how the iron, the nerves, the aura field, how it connects to the different planes. You know all that now. If not, you can review it later. Sannyasi got very specific with me, and we got into systems technology. And you got to realize that I had no idea I was going to do this. In 1972, if you told me I was going to be in the pyramid business, I'd say, you're crazy. I'm not even interested in it, you know. I'm a retired aerospace engineer studying there in Tibet, just taking acid, and all I want to do is space out and forget the material world, you know. That's where I was at. But anyhow, when she started to bring me back around the corner, she describes on page 133 here, we begin to describe the physical characteristics of the chakras. And it's, basically, it's describing the wavelengths of the energy that are created by our bodies physically impacting the natural forces of the universe, and it's creating a weaving weaving like a weaver's pattern. Like here's the chakra system. It turns and it breaks these forces and it creates these vortexes. And what she is describing here is reality, basically, in a few short words, a paragraph or two. So what we're going to describe here is exactly what happens at the moment that one energy of force inside your body collides with one energy of force from the outside universe. Okay? This is all happening within a billionth of a second, all what I'm about to read. Okay? And the example I gave is the root, the base, and the spine chakra. At the impact, the energy is directed into four directions simultaneously. So we have, in the body, we have seven different endocrine glands. Each endocrine gland has a different frequency, it's tuned to a different octave. Okay, one of seven musical notes. Each octave, each frequency, is a finer frequency than the previous one. The coarsest frequency, the lowest notes, the base of the spine, the highest one is the crown chakra, which has got 960 spokes. We're talking about the low chakra now, the base of the spine, 4 spokes. At impact, the energy is directed into 4 directions. Now, this is the swastika being described. This is was the Atlantean symbol. Hitler described the swastika in a counterclockwise motion, which is destruction, which is what he was about. And the swastika of Atlantis was a clockwise direction swastika. You can see by the way the arms are, which way would be picking the rotation. At impact, the energy is directed in the 4 directions. By the way, Hitler did that on purpose. He knew the proper direction of the swastika. That was his control. He wanted to be God. And that was the way, and he had to destroy all creation in its natural way and dictate through the death his voice. I mean, this man was brilliant. I learned a lot from him. At impact, the energy is directed into 4 directions. You know what was really funny is that not only did I personally know Hitler in the last lifetime very well, I knew his dog, I knew his wife, I knew his family, I also knew 2 or 3 generals. In this lifetime, there's some other people around. In this lifetime, when I went back to work, I worked with the same general that I knew in the past life who used to fly his plane around. He's now a film director. I worked with Wernher von Braun. We used to work with Hitler. He hated him. You know, Wernher von Braun, at Pina Mundi, where he lived, was his grandfather's hunting grounds. And that's where the caves at Pina Mundi were, where they built all the V-2s. I knew Wernher intimately. And then another guy, I forget his name now, there's 3 of them that I knew from the Third Reich. I went through 2 bodies and they went through 1. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, at impact, the energy is directed into 4 directions simultaneously, where it gradually dissipates into all cells at the region of the impact, causing cell reproduction. Boom. She has just described mitosis. Okay? So, page 134. There's pictures, drawings, everything. So we've just gotten this mitosis. Of course, pow, turn, you know, caused the cell to grow. So it was the force, it was the shock. It's like you get hurt in the fall, right? Not the falling, like he was saying, well said. The force of it causes an expansion because cells, out of nowhere, create more cells. It's the force of the 2 forces coming together. It's the beauty, it's a gorgeous thing when you begin to understand it. So the force of the impact caused the cells to grow and the shock of the impact. You know, like spank a baby when it takes its first breath and just lost 20-some base pairs per turn and 25% of its life is gone at its first breath. The force of the impact caused the cells to grow and the shock of the impact caused the 4 spokes to rotate like a wheel. The force of the impact is called a strike. The area in which a strike occurs is called a struck zone. As the wheel rotates, it marries or balances a secondary. I need some of that salt water. As the wheel rotates, it marries or balances the secondary or nervous energies in the body. This intermingling is much like a weaver's pattern. These chakras naturally divide into 3 groups, the lower, the middle, and the higher. Remember the same thing about the nervous system, the 3 frequencies of the nervous system, autonomic, sympathetic, parasympathetic, the first 3 colors of the universe, will, love, and intellect, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, it's all here. The first and second chakras having but few spokes or petals are principally concerned with receiving into the body the 2 forces which come in at a physical level, one being the serpent fire from the earth and the other one the vitality of the sun. These centers of the middle group are engaged in forces which reach man through his personality. Boom. 2 people with auras bumping. One sees the other. The other sees the others. Imbalances creates karma and dharma simultaneously. It's all here. It's real simple. I know Roy's getting it. The centers of the middle group, okay. Okay, then it says all these centers feed certain ganglia in the body, which we talked about. Okay, now, I'm going to go on into this. I'm going to skip ahead. Every human on this planet is out of balance in one way or another. So as energy from a balanced universe such as ours strikes our bodies, entering through the bodies at chakra points, shown in the following drawings, At that exact moment, it encounters our unbalanced bodies, and it is put into a temporary